Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Some would have been looking after him like Florence Nightingale almost, and they were cooking him good food, and they'd find the McDonald's wrappers in the bin.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
All right, happy Thursday, everybody. Go on. What are you laughing at?
I'm going to have a groovy shaving.
What?
Faces.
What? I can't hear them.
No, we're just talking about grooming.
Grooming.
Yeah, go on.
And such, yeah.
Go on, bring it to the class.
No, sorry, sir. Go ahead.
No,
sorry, sir.
Don't be dickhead.
Oh, please, sir.
All right, go on.
You've been doing running hard.
Tell the good people what's coming up there. Go on.
His arms fall that he's acting out. He's acting out.
Some banter about fucking grooming.
Relax.
Class.
It was no banter. It was just
sincere.
Brother.
30 seconds into the show, and we've already had an F.
The Thursday papers are imminent. About 3¾ minutes from now, we'll do the papers. Exactly. Bang on that. You can hold us to that. Then Barry Murphy and Tim Clancy will be on the line. Why? The FAI Cup final is imminent. It's upon us. Cork City Shamrock Rovers, 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon, the Aviva Stadium. I believe 30,000 tickets have been shifted thus far. This is going to Stephen Doyle on yesterday's LOI pad. What will happen here? Very out of form Shamrock Rovers. And Cork City have been largely awful for the season. Rovers go to AEK Athens tonight. No Rory Gaffney. No Josh Honan going to Greece. So that'll be interesting. Of course, Stephen Brady hasn't done a double yet. Then we'll have a classic game club for the third week in a row, I believe. And it'll be Ireland against Japan 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
It started so well, so promising.
Yeah.
Could have ended.
The classic game clubs have been joyous so far. We're going to take a trip down bad memory lane, this one.
That'll be with yourself. And then Matthew Benn will be in the house, talk about the Ireland under-17s, who put Panama to the sword in a dream start to the World Cup last night. It's going to Sean O'Connor's report in the Irish Independent. 4-1, Ireland won. And also...
I missed the one. It was like late. Consolation goal for Panama.
Yeah, sure.
It was 4-0 when I stopped watching.
And then Josh Rock, Matthew Brennan.
Who is
was
he?
A conversation with. Josh Rock?
Who is he?
Who is he?
Yeah.
Well, how do you encapsulate the guy?
Well, tell us.
I don't know if I have the words for it. You know?
We're talking about Josh Rock.
Yeah.
He's a darts player.
Right. Yeah.
Dartist.
But what's so significant about Josh Rock?
Good question.
We'll find out.
Anything?
From now.
Now, are you back with us now?
Was he available? Is that it?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Is he all right?
I'm just asking. Yeah.
We're all
tell us about him. Come on.
Turn off.
Sell the bit.
I'm very excited about it. Are you okay?
Great, yeah.
Yeah.
What was your joke?
No joke.
All right.
They're quite literally just talking about how they shave.
Yeah,
and he asked me if
we were giggling.
You didn't say dry shave, did you? No.
No, I said, when's the last time you clean shave?
Clean shave, but yeah. I don't do it anymore because I had to do it for years.
And it only stemmed from just, you know, the excitement we have.
You had to do it for years because you were working.
In a hotel, yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they insist on that?
I can see why. I mean, it's not, you want people in a hotel to be looking prim and proper.
Is that legal? Can places do that? Can they tell you to
question? This is a
I can vouch for it. I was at St. Rochester Park Hotel, 2007, first dress code, clean shaven.
Yeah.
But is it legal? Good question. Anymore? I don't know. And also, like, does it look better that you've got like a lot of blotch and cutting and like?
I'm not doing that. I was a good shaver. Like,
no, but that is no, but that
shaver,
I actually appreciate
I'm a bad
that.
Shaver because I have sensitive skin.
Why are you saying blotch?
You're taking a sense of
on the moisturizer.
No.
You'll be all right, Noel. It's a good point you make, though, overall, sure, because sometimes people do look better with hair, you know, in the face.
It,
and now, I think it's gone more casual these days, you know. if you look at a lot of women now, right, instead of heels, will wear runners up at night out.
Say a lot of women are wearing beards now.
Heels.
That's what you're implying.
Or heels on night out. There were runners. And I'd say whoever the first woman to do that was, the rest of womankind are in great debt too. Because suddenly nights out are far more comfortable. And it's the same for men too. When I was going out at the start, nightclubs, brown or black shoes only.
Oh yeah.
Couldn't get into a nightclub without it.
Nonsense.
Now you can wear what you want. We paved the way for you to wear Lazio vintage clothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Embarrassed yourself for us, yeah.
I remember my father talking about going through training college for catering college. And he definitely talked about like they'd be lined up, you'd have your nails checked and everything.
Well, you can, that's good.
Yeah. But like that they're proper,
serving
everything's
food
proper.
Dirty nails.
No, not just dirty, but like properly cared for. Not just dirty, like Jesus, that'd be a fairly low bar.
The bar is pretty low, isn't it?
No, it wasn't then. We've lost that. We don't take catering as seriously anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of a dying art.
It's a means to an end for a lot of people, you know, so the heart's not there.
Yeah.
And you'll see it in their eyes too when they're taking your order. They don't want to be there.
Nope. It's a shame. Because when it's done well, it's amazing.
When you have someone who loves it, you'll stay there longer. I'll tell you that for sure. They'll give them more money.
And you'll come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to the wrong place.
I'm not being ironic. I feel it's the same. I do feel strongly about that. It's one of the things that I've degraded that I've... It's quite upsetting. There's no money in it, of course. I'm not saying it is a means to an end, but...
I see it a lot. I see it online, you know, people going to TikTok, Instagram, complaining about... what's the point in working, you know, if you're going to get that little money and you have to work that hard, what do you have to show for it?
Yeah.
But the love of the love of the grind, the love of the job, it seems to be gone.
Yeah.
A lot of people are rude as well to caterers. So that doesn't make the job very enjoyable.
Did you do it?
Did I do it?
Yeah.
What? Be rude?
Caterer. No.
Yeah, I was...
If you want to confess, that's fine. The platform is yours.
Yeah. I worked in a bar for a while. So you end up doing bits and pieces in terms of bringing down drinks. I wouldn't call myself a waiter, but...
Yeah.
Okay. I have experience.
There should be national service where everybody has to do 6 months in Ireland working in the hospitality industry.
There's a lot to be
said. Instead of joining the army, you'd have to do 6 months.
There's a lot to be said for like having a shit job.
I don't think it's a shit job.
Some form where it's very difficult.
Yeah,
no,
and you don't
thing.
Drive.
Everybody has.
It's huge.
Yeah,
it's huge for you.
I just want to distance myself from the shit job. I get you.
Formative
experiences where
I know what I mean.
You know what I mean.
What are you going to do?
Service industry, very important. Anyway, will we talk about the All Stars? You want to talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
There used to be a time, I think, when you were a kid, when the All-Stars were really important. Like, you'd parse over the history.
Yeah.
You know, Damian Martin, first All-Star, because he was the goalkeeper. And then you'd follow through, and you'd, whatever county was your county, you were mad into it. And it just feels like it has something. And is that just because we're old? But if I was a kid from Tipperary this morning, I'd be like, oh, 7. We should have had 9.
It's a great question.
Is it just for kids and the players involved? And your own county of the year, you win it?
I think it still matters in terms of... I think we talked about this last year, that like when someone retires, it's the first thing you mention, unless they're a multi...
DJ Carey, 5-time All-Star.
I don't think it is for the top legends of the game. I actually don't think it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Unless you're like, you've won a load of All-Irelands, then there's no point in saying it. But for... lads that might be coming from like a Cahill Mannion.
Yeah.
He retires. That'll be the first thing that's said about him.
I'd say with Colin Boyle when he was coming on. And obviously won't be now anymore, I presume.
Well, who knows? But maybe Andy's got a totally different attitude. You get out there and you spin.
spin. But it's a great barometer. It does have a resource as a great barometer when you're like 4-time All-Star Colin Boyle. And you're like, oh God. And then you dig into it and you're like 4-time in a row All-Star Colin Boyle. It's like you held down. You know, so I think there's a purpose, but I do get you. I have no real... Now, I'm aware of the biases and conscience of things as well, though. I have no interest in it necessarily because there's nothing necessarily there for me.
As a Limerick fan?
Yeah, like you're not. But like,
I wish the whole this year could just be expunged from the record book. Was there an All-Ireland? No, there was like some outbreak or something.
No, and
a plague arrived.
For like Kieran O'Sullivan, like it's amazing. Because you're thinking like, not that they're ruling it out, God knows, like they did so well this year. Maybe they go on and they're, with Neil O'Callaghan, like maybe their ceiling is higher than we all previously thought. But if it's not, and if they don't go on and win an All-Ireland or whatever, that's an amazing peak in your career where you're like, I think it just elevates you.
Tipperary, these are their first awards in six seasons.
No.
That's what it says in John Fogarty's for the Premier County. These are their first awards in six seasons.
For 6 years.
Yeah, the fourth time in 11 years they've got seven.
That is incredible. They've had nobody over the last few years.
Yeah. And then you come and you just piratically, overnight, like mushrooms.
That's incredible. I know it makes sense, but it doesn't sound right. Nah, that can't have
happened. Sucking you in here. Getting you into it. Yeah. All of a sudden you're like, ooh.
I love the trivia around it.
Mm. Cork's Hall has won less than last year when Clare beat them in the final. First awards for former captain Sean O'Donoghue and Kieran Joyce. Hurler of the Year nominee Brian Hayes. Darragh Fitzgibbon will collect his third All-Star. He's the only All-Star who was also honoured last year, so he's the only one who's gone back to back. Fair play. After winning no awards last year despite reaching the All-Ireland semi-final, Kilkenny have two this time in the form of fullback Hugh Lawler, who wins his third, which is, you know, I suppose in Hugh Lawler's case it's like you were the dominant player in your position over a period of time. And Martin Keogan, who is the son of Liam Keogan, who won in 97.
I love that stuff.
Hurling's fifth father and son.
Amazing.
How many of them can you name?
Oh, that's a great question. Do they go? So when do they start officially? Because I know there's other ones.
71.
So there'll be Brogans.
Hurling's fifth.
Oh, Hurling's fifth. What if I think about that? You keep going.
Hot monsters.
Carl Mannion, the second time All-Star, having received one in 2015. That is pretty impressive to have that level of longevity. Is their first All-Star in 2 years. Keane O'Sullivan is their first recipient since 2013.
Jesus.
Wow.
Dublin's 11th ever hurling All-Star.
See that? Yeah. I do like when, I'll be honest with you, I do like when there's a bit of a mix to it.
Me too.
Because there was it's slightly ludicrous. I don't know after which year it was. Did Limerick win 11 one year?
I don't know.
Like it might be justified, but it's.
which set of brothers have the most
in hurling?
Yeah,
potentially Cannings.
Potentially, but no.
No.
One man has the same number of All Stars as the Canning family entirely.
Oof. Which brother? So is it? Oh well, like maybe Tommy.
Yeah,
Tommy and Porrick.
Tommy has nine. Yeah. Porrick has two.
Yeah, there's a lot of heavy lifting there.
9-2. So Joe has five, and Ollie has four.
Okay. It's a more satisfying answer though.
Well, whatever. You know? I mean, if you're Tommy, you're like, yeah, whatever. I beat you on my own, lads.
Probably the same thing there, but no one's talking about. I think Tommy stands alone. Like, I don't think he gets roped in with anyone else in terms of like the great Walsh brothers. I think he's just too big for to be pared down.
Anyway, Ronan and Paddy now have nine between them. I don't know what the breakdown of that is. So the Maher brothers and the Cannings are joined on nine each. Have you got any names for me?
I don't know why I can't think.
Two Kilkenny lads. A Limerick.
Okay, so would Richie Power be one?
Richie Power Senior, Richie Power Junior.
There's two Limerick.
One Limerick.
Quaid.
Tommy and Nicky. Tip goalkeeping dynasty.
He was goalkeeper in 2019. Hogan.
Brian Hogan and his dad, Ken.
Yeah.
And then Fan and Philly Larkin from the village.
Okay. Is that all? You think there'd be more?
Fifth father and son pairing, that's all.
Okay. I feel like there's more in the football. But anyway.
There you go.
Good for them. And the football's announced tomorrow?
Yeah, the team is announced tomorrow, but the player of the year is going to be announced tomorrow night too for hurling.
7:30 on telly. I haven't watched it in years because years where it's been just a bad broadcast. And this, apparently they've sexed it up a bit. I don't know.
I don't think I've ever watched it live at all.
Is Marty still presenting it?
I don't know.
Not sure.
Presume he is. It's a bit, it's hard though. It's hard to know what you do with it. How do you make it more?
Well, Tommy's idea is to show the meeting. Then everybody has to have their homework.
The meeting, yeah. I wonder, is that a little bit of, I don't know.
Well, that's showbiz, but it's the same result, that? Isn't it? It's the same result, ultimately.
Why are they so late?
Is it late?
No, but like, it's like, and we were talking about this afterwards. You're like, when you're thinking about guys who aren't there, you're like, but like the final was 4 months ago.
Was it 4 months ago?
It's like July.
It's November now.
The end of August. Sorry, the end of July. So yeah. August, September, October.
3.5 months.
Yeah. Like it's a decent enough. Why the delay?
Yeah.
Well, actually, this is very unlike you. You generally don't like rushing things.
What's that based on?
Change.
I'm not opposed to change.
Well, no, you are.
I get the kind of, maybe it's for the club season and stuff, and it means players are more likely
to actually have the weekend to enjoy themselves.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it probably doesn't help with the engagement thing. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're just all out of touch. Maybe loads of people will watch it.
Alan on YouTube saying, we've all forgotten whatever views we had after the championship.
Yeah.
It is just so long ago, really, isn't it?
Like,
it just kind of becomes a tally thing. Yeah. It's like the winner's gone out. Okay, yeah, okay, that sounds all right.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Two other quick stories that I want to mention, but probably not get into here. Go on. Sorry.
Yeah. I do like the inclusion of Cathal Mannion. We were disputing that beforehand, but I was, the guy single-handedly made that not embarrassing against Kilkenny. But then the other thing about the All-Stars is, like, it essentially comes down to the final, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you play very well in the final, or more importantly, if you don't play very well in the final, all the good work up to that point is done.
Yeah, I agree with that, because it's the whole point of the history books are written after the final. Yeah, it's the moment where you're asked to do the thing. Win today.
Yeah. So I know what I have from this, right? Not, the graphic of the 15 players was an arrow up and saying Aaron Connolly, because it was like he couldn't get any next there near to that team after the final. Heading into the final, I was like, this guy could get player of the year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it not supposed to be a team of the season? Mm-hmm. Or a team of the championship? Well, is that not the point?
Well, that's the interpretation of it, right? So the All-Stars is like, how could you not have an All-Star team festooned with players involved in the final? But it just goes to show all the work up there, because we take it so seriously up to that point, right? Think about the way we talk about the Munster Championship, the way we talk about what we're going to do about Leinster or whatever, the way we get into provincial finals, and then after that, and we take it like we're analysing it right there to that point, and it's almost like unofficially talking about your hurler of the year as you're going along, and all of that's wiped out after the final.
It's a bit bizarre, isn't it?
Maybe that's the way it should be. But the point on YouTube... We were both saying earlier, it's totally true. So 3.5 months ago, looked at the paper this morning, it's like, All-Stars, I have to go back to the summer now in my head.
Yeah.
But there's a double standard.
And remember the final.
But there is a double standard to that.
To which? To the final?
Because if you take, take Kieran O'Sullivan, for example, or Cathal Mannion, both incredibly deserving individual things, but ultimately their teams. So Dublin, obviously, massive win against Limerick, but then ultimately... destroyed by Cork, who get destroyed by Tipperary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So why in that scenario, are you not... They're he's been gifted for a year's work.
Yeah.
Whereas, as you're saying with Connolly, it's like one game, you're out now, that's all gone.
Mannion
as well, it's like Galway did nothing.
That is interesting, right? Because Mannion dipped out far earlier than Connolly.
Yeah.
But he's been rewarded, and Connolly has... I'm not, you can absolutely argue, so Connolly doesn't deserve it anyway, whatever. I'm just picking out Connolly as a star performer up to the final. But he's right. But I thought Mannion was unbelievable against Kilkenny, and maybe it's the whole George Best Northern Ireland thing. It's not his fault that he was playing for this team. He played very well. Yeah. The rest of them didn't. I like his inclusion. At the same time, I don't have any argument against that there's only 4 Cork players in the team.
Well, that did it,
isn't it?
I like the diversity as well, but that's just... I agree with that team.
You said there's an inconsistency in that.
It's just like, you get to the final, but you lose.
And is there no bit where, a set number of players do get forgiven the All-Ireland final performance, but some All-Ireland final performances are so egregious that his individual performance was bad on the day, whereas Colin Mannion never had a bad performance on the day that people are putting to him and go, well, you can't put him in because that performance was bad.
Yeah, but it's by the same token, like, I'm sure there's guys who are playing for, like, Wexford and Antrim and everything else who also put in
regulars,
but they're not even going to get within an arse's roar of it. They're not even considered.
Like, the Dublin reaching the semi-final is such a flare-out that it's so significant that they're rewarding that. Whatever Mannion did this year, that the selectors are like, well, he never had one of those Connolly performances. And so his performances were so egregiously better than everybody else on his team that he's carrying them. And even at the last minute, when there was a collapse all around him, he was still carrying them and he kept the fight going.
It's funny.
Connolly didn't.
It is a strange one though, because Galway were destroyed by Kilkenny the first time and then beaten by them so comfortably in the Leinster final and then lose the All-Ireland quarter final. It's weird, like, for a player, like, it's nothing slight against him, it's just weird for a player who'd be on a team like that, that had their year. They had a bad year, like, by their own standards, bad year. Like, I remember that first game against Kilkenny, they were like, it was so one-sided. Yeah. I remember it because it was the first, it might have been, I don't know if it was the first round, but it was one of the first big games in a championship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I remember I was talking to Mick over and back, thinking, this is awful.
Yeah.
It's like, it was such a hammering.
We had Tommy Walsh on, I think, a couple of days later, and he was almost embarrassed to analyse it. Yeah. He said, what's there to say?
It was so one-sided.
Yeah.
So it's a strange thing.
Anyway.
Strange thing as well for a guy with an All-Star. I could kind of get it's like, oh, okay, a bit of a career one. I don't know. Again, no slight on it. I know what that sounds like, and it's very hard to come back with that and say no slight on him. But yeah. I'm just surprised that Galway player's in there after the year they had.
No midfielder for Tipperary, obviously. They also didn't have a midfield All-Star when they lifted Lee McCarthy 9 years ago. So they'll have to nurse that grievance over the winter. Two stories. One, I don't know if I'm going to talk about this, but it's on the front of the Irish Times today. Horse trainer alleges Comer offered him bribe. There is no byline on the printed version of the Irish Times, and the details of it are really remarkable, right? That's the story there. And a totally unrelated story on the back of the Examiner this morning. Tipperary GAA gifted Centre of Excellence land at Coolmore. Tipperary GAA has been gifted 14 acres of land at Coolmore Stud by owner John Magner. The land will be developed into a new centre of excellence the Tip GAA describes as a transformative milestone in the development of Gaelic games in the county. Now, obviously, just recently, it has emerged that Coolmore and John Magner have been buying up loads of land in Tipperary. They're now one of the biggest landowners in the county. And obviously, there was that court case just recently about a deal that didn't go through in the end. And it's just interesting that they're taking this moment to make a significant gift of 14 acres, which obviously is not hugely significant in terms of the land bank that they own, to Tipperary GAA. But yeah, just thought we'd mention that. Anyway, move on.
Were you ever down there?
Yeah.
It's so well kept.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm not just notably, a friend of mine lives down around there. I'm just driving through those roads and it's like, it's like a drawing.
Mm.
It's like you're going through something like it's just incredible.
Well, the tax breaks on stud fees that Charlie Hoy introduced back in the day wasn't capped, I don't think, at the time. So stuff like Sadler's Wells, which I think made hundreds of millions, it's a good opportunity for them to be able to spend money on manicuring the lawns and there you go. 0879-180-180 is the WhatsApp number. We're next.
Champions League last night?
Yeah.
Any interest in it? So Dan Burns got a curling header.
Class. Best ever header of all time, people were saying. I don't know how you measure that.
Robin van Persie, 2014 World Cup.
Yeah.
Henrik Larsson did something similar.
Enzo Schifo.
Enzo Schifo loves him.
It's up for debate. Like, it's up for debate.
It was in great partnership with the camera angle.
Yes,
slow-mo. Yeah. Mateta the weekend, I thought it was great.
So from the other side, had Dan Byrne done
from behind
that,
them,
we'd never have known how good it was. But it curled it with his head. Two headers to nil, Newcastle won. Against another Spanish club, Athletic Club.
Mm.
It's unanimous now to be called. And Villarreal lost to Paphos, my boys. I summered there in 23.
Paphos.
It's gorgeous. Gorgeous. But that's Champions League final there.
It's in Greece, is it?
Cyprus.
Yeah. What are we doing in Cyprus?
23. One thing led to another, 2023. Before we knew it, we booked it.
Which is a couple of weeks.
2 weeks.
All right, sorry. Yeah, yeah. That was like one of those in between college and the job.
No, you're 2 years ago.
You're like Shirley Valentine.
2 years ago. So I'm very well. The WhatsApp group's alive and well, like with Pafos support last night. You know, David Luiz plays for them. Do you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Former
yeah,
Arsenal Chelsea defender. So they beat Villarreal 1-0. Man City. Very hockey, Borussia Dortmund 4-1. This one of these Champions League nights, it's like you're just going across them. It's like everyone's winning kind of handily. Erling scored again against his old club. Sort of toned down his celebration a little bit. And Phil Foden had himself to a couple. Mm. Barcelona, though, were in a bit of a game. They drew 3-3 with Club Brugge.
Did you see Yamal's goal?
I did not see any of this game.
Yeah, the finish.
Good. Unbelievable. Finish. It was just he dribbled through the tiki-taka football. It was class. Class.
He dribbled. Was it an individual goal?
No, it wasn't. I can't remember who he laid it off to, but he got it back from someone and then just slipped it past the keeper. It was brilliant.
Okay. Chelsea drew 2-2 with Carabag, of course, who Irish football fans will be well aware of this season. Garnacho and the Lap went on at half time. Don't know what's happening with Gittens, who they got from Dortmund. They hooked him at the break.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going on with this boy. Garnacho came on. First thing he and the Lap did was a goal. The Lap retrieved possession. Beautiful true ball to Garnacho. Garnacho kind of... who scored Ireland's goal against England, Italian 90? Kevin Sheedy?
Sheedy, yeah.
Do you remember Sheedy tries to pass the ball through and it's a bad pass. And it comes right back to him and then he finishes at the bottom corner. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So he tries to pass it through to a striker. It's an awful clearance. The ball finds its way back to Sheedy seconds later and he fires home. Garnacho did the same thing last night.
Is Garnacho good again? Is that what you're saying?
Tried to find Joao Pedro. Intercepted, came back to him on his left foot, bang into the far corner, recreating the goal 35 years later. He was good, yeah, he was alright when he came on. It was a 2-2 again. It's the same conversation we had with Graham yesterday, same conversation we had at the top of the show yesterday. It was like, you know, what's the make of all of this? Do you know, I kind of see this as this, it's a bit of crack. No one gets hurt this time of year.
Yeah,
it's all a bit of fun. It's the same way I felt about the group stages 2 years ago.
You've time to recover if you've had a bad start. Have you seen Ajax? Lost 3-0 to Galatasaray. Bottom of the table. Minus 13 goal difference. Already.
What's going on with the boys?
What's going on, lads?
Never been the same since Erik ten Hag left.
Yeah. I think
that might be true, you know.
He's holding the place together.
That might be true.
It is, because I think Slot came in after that with Feyenoord, PSV, whichever one he was at. Yeah.
And then today, so Shamrocks is TNT Sport, we'll call him. They played 5:45 Irish time. Away to Auk. Athens, and then Shelbourne play at 8 p.m. against Drita. That's at home. That's for tonight. So lots happening.
Lots happening. Yeah.
I was in Cherry Orchard yesterday. You interested?
Where is it?
Where is that? Yeah.
Ballyfermot.
Okay.
Around that part. Unbelievable setup. A who's who of ex players who went on to be internationals. We actually have a video of this if it's available. And we can talk through it. This is the tunnel at Cherry Orchard. I might get it there. But basically, Nathan Collins pumped a load of money into this club. And it looks extraordinary.
Personally, or because he got transferred a lot?
So here we go. Here's the tunnel, right?
That's a good question.
There's Jesse Stapleton. And kind of, there's Vinnie Perth there in the background. He was the subject of the documentary. There's the trophy cabinet there to the left. You'll get this all in the documentary.
That looks great.
Sinclair Armstrong and Nathan Collins there. Enda Stevens, Mark Travers, Stephen Quinn. Andy Reid.
Good team.
Yeah, they all came through Cherry Orchard.
That's a decent fight.
There's the referees room. They have a referees room. They have a games room in there.
David Langan,
exactly. And that is I can't see. Oh, it's Jamie McGrath. So, incredible, right? So they have a huge Astro training pitches, proper pitch. Vinny hadn't been there for 6 months, so he came and he was like, it's looking even better again. When he was playing there was nothing. It was just the pitch. It was the same thing with Keith Tracy was saying about Belvedere. But Nathan Collins has been very good to the club since he became professional. His dad and granddad played for Cherry Orchard, and Jesse Stapleton is the other one as well. Jesse Stapleton is the one who's inspired a nutritional improvement at the club. They've opened a cafe and they have healthy food options.
Right.
And Jesse Stapleton played for the boys team because there was no girls team. There's a picture of her playing with the boys, and then above that is a picture of the subsequent girls teams that have been created. Thanks in large part to Jesse Stapleton. It's pretty cool. And this is largely their own work, you know. I remember even in Cork, right, playing football growing up, hearing about Cherry Orchard, how good they were. That if there's a national competition, you want to be avoiding them, because Vinny scored the winner in the Intermediate Cup final for Cheriarty against College Corinthians. They're my team, Cork. And you'd be terrified of these lads. Played alongside Keith Fahey, midfield. So anyway, all of that will be out very soon.
Very good.
You made me.
Do you have a lot of faith that the money for the academies will be spent well on the back of seeing something like this? Does it give you confidence, or are these separate things?
Yeah, I guess what we're trying to do in this whole thing is, yeah, is showing the impact that a club can have on people who eventually made a profession. And then that did take up a lot of our conversation yesterday. Vinny, because people will be aware of it, that he's very passionate about this whole topic anyway. But ultimately, there's a kind of bit of hopelessness as well to the whole thing, that I was asking him, in your lifetime, do you think this will be rectified, that there will be a proper academy structure? Or in other ways to look at it, an adequate football industry in the country? And there was a bit of a silence, and the ultimate answer was no. So in the meantime, let's celebrate the likes of Belvedere and Cherry Orchard. But I don't know what will lead to by the time any of us leave this planet.
Very sad. On
a happy note.
Jesus.
Happy Thursday, everybody.
Jesus.
Does the disagree?
How do you shave? Is it clean or is it wet?
Clean. Very clean. Always clean. So do you disagree with that assertion?
No, I just think it's very sad.
But it's not, they're not sad, Cherry Orchard. They're happy with what they're doing.
Yeah,
we're talking about
the
national conversation here. Like, they are the envy of clubs around the country in terms of what they've done. But if we're talking about making this a sustainable industry, that all the people in those walls don't necessarily have to leave to make it, then we all are very aware that that's a million miles away.
Yeah. You need that type of thing popping up around the country, and that's just not going to happen anytime soon, is it?
I don't know about that. I think that, like, a fatalism at the start of a project is a bit of a cancer.
But they've started the project, but they're not thinking about that goal, to pardon the pun. They're not thinking about...
Who's not thinking?
Cherry Orchard aren't thinking about developing the national consciousness of the game and making it an industry. They themselves are maximising what they have to offer.
Okay, so smart people are able to do stuff even though they don't have the apparatus of the state behind them. What if you do actually get the apparatus of the state behind them? Then anything is possible. I think you have to be optimistic about what might be possible as opposed to fatalistic. But I, let's wait and see and have this conversation.
Yeah.
Like 20 years.
Yeah. Watch this space.
No, but we've made great progress in the last couple of years. Like, there was no funding, and now there's funding. Let's see what happens with the funding. Like, the league is improving. The money during the week went up for the cost of the redevelopment of Dalymount, but it still got through. So that's going to happen. Like, Sligo have got their money. Shane Lowry's going well this morning, everybody.
Very good. Yeah.
7-under through 14, one stroke behind. Tommy Fleetwood also on 7-under. We're in the Yas Links, which I think is Abu Dhabi.
It is
Abu Dhabi, isn't it?
Yeah. How's Rory going?
Rory always wins in Dubai, doesn't he? Or does he win here as well?
Rory wasn't too far behind last night.
He's not on the top. I don't see him there. Hang on a second. No, McIlroy.
Oh, he's back then tied 24th, 2-under.
Okay, there you go. The golf in the morning is always a little bit...
doesn't get you going, does it?
What's going on here? Why are they...
It will be interesting, Don. It's heartening to see that stuff is, a lot of it is off the basis of someone who feels sufficiently connected despite going, to kind of still keep in touch. And that's probably really, it's the kind of thing that you know, where the GA just has a monopoly on the idea of volunteerism. Whereas, like, it's just complete. That's effectively what he's endorsing or enabling there. But we don't. It's funny how it never gets. It's the optics of these things never get framed. You know, that, like, there's such bullshit. The stuff with, like, it's not the thing that GA volunteerism, absolutely. But the notion that football doesn't, and the notion that it's less than rugby as well. I'm sure the exact same thing. But I don't know how you go about changing that perception. It's a very, very hard thing to shift, but I do think that ultimately comes down to the root of an awful lot of why they have so many challenges. Because there's that... Yeah, that perception of it being somewhat apart or not. But, like, the amount of people that spend time, giving their time to football for nothing.
Well, like, yeah.
incredible numbers. Like, it's just, but it's still sort of seen that's some sort of way as if, again, I know you've been talking about it, like going hat in hand, looking for money, but not even that, just the perception of it and how it's regarded. And we'd never talk about GAA the way that we talk about football, despite it being as Irish as anything else in terms of people's relationship with it and everything. We'd never allow it.
There was a man called Kevin Bissick who showed us around yesterday, and he used to run bars and restaurants and all that, and then he had cancer up until a year ago, and then when he recovered from cancer, his family were saying, you know, you need something to do now to occupy your minds, because he's in retirement, like, and he basically runs the show from top to bottom. And when he was giving myself and Vinny the tour yesterday, if you think about that wall of fame there that they all have, like, this is like a football institution, Cherry Orchard. Very little of the conversation was about the football. He was talking about how we're developing facilities in the club. So that games room is actually to keep kids in the club so that they'll just spend the day there if it's raining outside, because they want to give them something to do.
Yeah.
And his big thing is nutrition as well, is because he was like, it wasn't too long ago where it would just be like chocolate crisps and Lucozade that the kids would have, so we need to change that. So they're running it like a professional organisation. And when you drive into that place, right, it looks like a professional club. Because it's not just the we'll see this in the documentary overall, like, there's, we have footage of outside of it. It's incredible when you drive in, because their colours are red and black, and it's just branding everywhere. Red and black is absolutely everywhere. They're well on point with all the things. They have a home and away jersey, they're equally gorgeous. They have a club shop. It's insane. If you were a football fan not from Ireland, knew nothing about Irish football, dropped into here, you would think, well, this is a professional club. That's the best way I could describe it, how it looked. A small but professional club. That's just the inconsistencies across the country, you know. Then you go to another club who's like, might have equal status in terms of how they performed outside of Dublin, and then essentially it's a field with a party cabin.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the industry. It's like, you know, yeah, I wouldn't be accepting the thing where, like, oh, you've given up hope and all that. It's not that. Like, it's simultaneously positive when not having any faith that it will become a football industry. Like, Cherry Orchard are not in a state of depression. They're a state of hope themselves about what they're doing. But it's not with the goal of making, well, hopefully this will help create a football industry in the country. That would be fantastic. But if they set out to achieve that, they would drive themselves insane. There's no collective thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the FAI would say that they're putting plans in place and that they have good people around, and they have modernised. So, will we get into that conversation properly with a few guests at some point?
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea, yeah.
Will we talk Man United?
Jason, absolutely. Absolutely. All Jason the right Wilcox. Sounds. There's people with a plan.
Did you have something else you wanted to say?
No, you can go Jason Wilcox first if you want.
So, Wilcox, very quiet for ages and ages and ages and ages and ages. And somebody was critical of... Was somebody critical on the show here or somewhere else of, like, the Manchester United hierarchy are very inexperienced, with the exception obviously of the Rahat. CEO, who obviously had come from Man City, but, you know, it wasn't in the Man United way. It was Nicky Butt, and do Butt and Scholes have a podcast?
They have it with Paddy McGuinness. Yeah,
is that every week?
It seems to be regular, I guess.
There was one specific episode that they did where they had done an interview with one of the papers were like, look at the people in charge of the club. This is their first job for most of them. Like, Wilcox, like, he's at Southampton. Was essentially the, but like, maybe that's where...
Was also at City.
Maybe that's where he learned a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and Berada had a senior role at City, but not as senior as he has at United.
I know we shouldn't be copying them because that's the City way.
It's it was only a few years ago Nicky Butt walked out of the club because he was working there.
Yeah.
So... I'm taking all that with a pinch of salt, but the shade that was thrown on Wilcox was like, who even is he? And since then, he's done a lot of stuff. He's been very public.
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks ago, he did something.
Yeah.
Was that an interview?
A similar thing. Yeah, I'm not... I don't know where that first one came from. That one seemed to be a bit... I'll look into that. But the latest one he's done now, it's the Inside Carrington podcast.
Yeah, so it's the Pravda for the party.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, I mean, they're
not getting tough questions there. It's like, well, what about these failures that you've presided over? And no, in fairness to them, but it is interesting, right? The last one they were talking about, they're going to spend big, they're going to back Ruben Amorim. So that was setting the table for all of the agents around Europe to get their prices ready for Manchester United coming to town, I thought. But in fairness, this time it's like, look, we're going to be a bit smarter and we're going to sign players who fit the squad as opposed to just being superstars. It's not about putting the Harlem Globetrotters in brackets.
Ah, you're reading the Athletic one. Yeah, I thought that was funny as well.
In brackets. An American exhibition basketball team. Close bracket.
Yeah.
Like, seriously?
That's a good one. I'd love to know when in the process that had to come up.
I'm reading this and the URL is not the Athletic. It's nytimes.com. Oh, yeah, I'm like, lads. Come on. It's like a debasement of your... Anyway, it's
maybe
not about
their demographics are quite young.
It's not about putting the Harlem Globetrotters together. If I look at the successful Man United teams, there was very functional players that would die for the badge, and there were some mavericks. The functional players who would die for the badge. There was loads of them. Your Butzes, your Nevilleses, your John O'Shea's.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a very high level of functioning you're kind of talking about there. Like, I'm not... I don't know if that... Yeah.
Your Fletchers.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, yeah, I was, yeah.
When you talk about Cantona, when you hear anybody talk about him, he was an ultimate professional. When I look now and I see the car park, the report time is 9:45. You see the lads coming in at 8:30, 8:45, preparing for training. This is a good sign. Bar's low, isn't it?
It's a nice start time.
It's like, would you not get them in for 8?
And probably much earlier than that,
have them all in for 6. Wilcox said last week that United have a clear plan to invest further in the squad. Last year's summer window was a lot more chaotic than this one. This one was really calm. We knew the plan. We knew which players we were going to target. We had our lists. We knew which areas of the pitch we needed to improve. So I actually think that they are making the right noises when it comes to recruitment, that they're not going out and signing your Schweinsteigers and Falcao's. There's no trolley dash at the last day. It's like, these are good quality players. We might be spending a bit much on them, but we actually think that they're going to fit the template of the team that we're trying to build. And they probably do need some water carriers. No?
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to stress, though. I think he stresses in that as well about, like, clean living professional. He stressed it a few times, like, what do they call it? That sort of, what's that thing that Christian...
Born again?
No. Oh, I forget the term. You know, Arnold. Anyway. But, it's an interestingly frank discussion to be having. You don't like laying out their plans, what they're, but I suppose it's also, as you're saying, like, I'm sure clubs are taking notice, but at the same point, they're also, I suppose, exuding
Christian Life by Thomas Arnold. Is that what you're talking about?
No, what's the thing called? Christian something. It's not Christian muscularity. Christian. I'll come back to it. It's like from the 1850s and all the English public schools and stuff. Anyway, but...
Muscular Christianity.
But there's
AI representation of...
There's a degree of that. It's like, we want the right sort of people. And it's an interesting...
it's a no dickheads rule for an English audience, right?
Pretty much. But it's definitely the kind of thing that people will want to hear. But I do think it also... It also... does kind of continue that warning that Amarim's always talking about, with the, like, functioning does tend to suggest that, you know, maybe not the best, and maybe this takes a bit more time, so be patient all the same, because there's going to be no superstars coming in, so it's an interesting thing. I presume they're kind of everything's trying to weigh everything up the same way. You excited?
I'm excited at the prospect of this working out under Ruben Amorim. I'm excited about that, what that would look like. A Ruben who doesn't have to be existential in every other press conference.
Yeah.
That's definitely exciting. I've been on board with Amorim throughout his whole tenure, in the way that I wasn't with Ten Hag. They won the League Cup and the FA Cup under Ten Hag, and I felt, this doesn't feel right. Same with Mourinho. Mourinho's in charge. They're winning... they won the League Cup and the Europa League in the same season. I was like, this still doesn't feel right. Something about this. And this is all intangible subjectivity I'm talking about here. But with Amorim, I'm like, hope this guy works out. Hope he's there a long time. I hope he gets the players that he wants and they can play the football that he likes. And I would like to see that. And then with Wilcox, look, it's not his fault he's inexperienced. So they're giving him the job, and he has a plan in place. And he's probably very aware of the Woodward era and how people laughed at that and laughed at United. And he would be fully aware of the reputation that the club has. How couldn't he be? Same with Parada. But the thing is, you're asking me now at the moment when United have won three games and drawn one. If you asked me a few weeks ago after the Brentford game and was like, "Will the joke continue?"
I was going to say, I love the timing of this. They wouldn't have done this after like Grimsby Town. You know, the timing of this is very
And the thing makes sense. Like, they're going to have another bad period. It's going to happen again, and then Wilcox and Bradwell will once again be questioned. This is going to take years for everyone to be fully respected in the process of United. They're still very much in the joke genre, to put it in movies. They want to be taken a bit serious.
They're coming out of that.
I think they're coming out of it.
It's actually not that. Like, look at how mediocre the teams after the top three are, right? So Spurs lurching from relegation threatened last year to now in the Champions League and actually doing okay in the Champions League. Like them, Newcastle, Villa, they're the only teams that Man United needs to be better than for the next 18 months.
Yeah, no, that's all true. But like,
and they have all of the financial might of the biggest club in the world.
Yeah, it's just it still occurs to me how recently it was that people were like, "Well, he's going to go now." Mm. Like, that was the other day. Like, after that Brentford game, everyone was like, "Well, he has to go now.
It's done." Yeah, we were saying it's done. Yeah.
So like, that's a very, very recent memory. Far more recent than the All-Stars.
But he just needs to be competent. Well, that group of people who are making these decisions and signing these players just needs to be relatively competent. It turned out Ten Hag probably wasn't. Like,
yeah.
You know.
I thought with Ten Hag that Ten Hag was fine. But with Ten Hag...
But it turned out anybody who thought that was wrong. It seems like
I was never on board with him. But I always thought that I thought the worst thing about him was that I kind of felt a little bit nothing towards him, but I thought he was like, he's a perfectly fine manager.
Okay.
He's grand.
It's take your feelings out of it and be objective about the football decisions that he made along the way. In retrospect, there were a lot of bad decisions.
And you look at Ajax as well, what happened there, like, booting out the door.
Yeah, so the first two games he took charge of, they got hammered, then he changed the system, and then they suddenly got better results, and then they won the League Cup in his first season. And then they won the FA Cup in the second season.
And he was responsible for making the
two FA Cup finals in a row.
He was the one who was doing the signings and the selling.
The problem was that they gave him too much to do. Like, so they gave him responsibility for recruitment. Like Vitor Pereira there at Wolves is gone now. So Ten Hag was...
not good at recruitment.
Was accustomed to recruitment, right? And sure, he's on a scout. Like, so he was looking in the Dutch league for people he knew. But that's a flaw of the club as well as the man.
Sure, but now they have a system in place, is my point. The Man City fellas that they've brought in saw how things were run on a competent basis and are aping that. And to Nicky Butt's point, like, oh, or whoever it was, and that was either Butt or Scholes giving out about, oh, it's too Man City. It's like, well, actually, that's just how business works.
Yeah, but
the Man United-ness of it can come across at some point.
I think to your point as well is that, like, even if they were to hit a bad run and Amorim was to go, there's a lot less to do now to clear up than where they were after when Ten Hag left. I think that system that's there is the right system, if you know what I mean. He might not necessarily turn out to be right, but like, it's clear that they're making smarter moves already.
And yeah, like, it's definitely more positive. Like, I everything I said there was to answer your question about how do I feel about it, which is good. But I'm also very aware that, like, it was only a few weeks ago. This whole thing was about to collapse. Like, I know people, I don't know if they've forgotten that or what. But at the moment, it's going well. So I would very, very much like, at the moment, it's going well.
The reason it didn't collapse, though, is that they signed three good attacking players in the summer and they were able to lean on those who, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not like it was a fluke that they've turned it round since. It's like, and they signed a good goalkeeper. They identified the problems. They had arguments about whether or not they were going to get rid of Onana. They did eventually get rid of him. They got, you know, they're fixing the issues that have been diagnosed as opposed to just lurching from crisis to crisis, flukily, you know, without...
Yeah, I don't know if they're out of that period personally. Like, after the Grimsby game, Amorim looked like he was about to go. Like, he was like, if they don't want to play for me, that's fine. Again, that's a few weeks ago. Brentford, they lose comfortably to Man City. It was like, where is all this going? And now they win three games and they draw one, and now people are like, well, it's really going in the right direction. I was like, it's better. It's definitely better.
Yeah.
I've no doubt about that.
You would slot down has been sacked in the week.
Oh, I didn't say that I'd agreed with the decision. I said that it could happen if they lost three games. But sure, now Liverpool are flying it.
Yeah. All right. Back.